I hope you are doing well. This is part three on showing the need that socialism has to believe in evolution. Socialism is expressed basically as a form of secular humanism as far as a philosophy goes. In secular humanism, they say we reject those features of traditional religious morality that deny humans a full appreciation of their own potentialities and responsibilities. Francis Schaeffer studied the decline of Western civilization and came to the conclusion that secular humanism is responsible for our problems because secular humanists advocate abortion, homosexuality, prisoners' rights, socialism, world government, and deny the existence of God. Every communist and every socialist is a secular humanist. And although every humanist is not a communist, every communist is a secular humanist. The beliefs of secular humanism were codified in the Second Humanistic Manifesto, where 17 concepts were presented that changed the world. Humanist Manifesto 2 proclaimed that secular humanists reject traditional religious beliefs and seek new human purposes and goals. They reject as both illusory and harmful the promises of immortal salvation or fear of eternal damnation. Thus, secular humanists believe that individuals determine what is right and wrong. Yet, as humanists condone homosexuality and other forms of sexual perversion, and they advocated the world community engage in cooperate and planning concerning the use of rapidly depleting resources. Population growth must be checked, and this is a basis of modern environmentalism and population control. They propose foreign aid and birth control for developing nations and call for international cooperation in culture, science, and arts and technology across ideological borders. And thing is, most concepts, they basically are wanting for a most of the concepts are advanced in the Humanist Manifesto 1 and 2 have been implemented, and their plan to introduce socialism, create a world government, and undermine the Judeo-Christian beliefs of our nation are well on the way to completion. Is secular humanism the force behind unfolding world events? Yes, it is. We see humanism versus Christianity, and we can see the world view in this chart of source is basically the Humanistic Manifesto. And one form of humanism is called postmodern humanism. And Rorty, Derrida, Foucault, and Foucault was actually a homosexual French philosopher, Lyotard and Baudrillard, all of them basically were atheists. So postmodern humanism is also atheism. It believes in what we call dialectical materialism. In other words, postmodern humanism is basically Marxism in reality. And we see that cosmic humanism would be the New Age movement. And we have ascended masters being channeled by people and going into a trance and basically saying God is speaking to them. And this is a form of pantheism. They believe that God is in everything. And therefore, Hinduism can have up to 330 million gods. The problem with this idea of cosmic humanism of channeling these ascended masters is very similar to things that are done on a Christian scale, which is like Jesus calling or God calling. All of a sudden, these people meditate, and all of a sudden, they hear God speaking to them. The thing is, when the author of Jesus calling speaks, she is basically saying the same thing and is speaking in the first person. Jesus is talking. I said this. So it's Jesus talking. He's speaking, and that's adding to scripture. And it says, do not add to his words, lest you be found a liar. In fact, so we want to be careful not to do that. But that's the same thing that the cosmic humanists are doing in a sense, but they're channeling a spirit which could be channeled by Christians as well. But anyway, whatever it is, they are getting this information from us from another source, they say. Biblical Christian theism is looking at the Bible as the only source of authority, and then that basically supernatural, and basically ethics based upon God's absolute rules. We see that true of biology, evolution, and then we see creation. Psychology is the monistic self-actualization of Maslow, or behaviorism of of Pavlov and some others, Watts and others, and then the cosmic humanism, this feminism, abortion, same-sex marriage, and all the rest of it. Whereas the Bible sees biblical counseling in the area of psychology, home, church, and state being the area of sociology, and reason, no objective truth. I used to debate a fellow who was he was postmodern when I was going to Oxford, and we got debate for argue, but it's really debate for hours, but it was difficult to argue with somebody that didn't believe in truth. You know, how do you prove something to somebody who doesn't even believe in truth? And then you have the afterlife, what there is no afterlife except for reincarnation in the cosmic world, law of positivism as opposed to natural and biblical law. Politics was basically globalism in all three areas of humanism, as opposed to basically the justice, God's laws, freedom, individual opportunities to choose. And then economics was basically capitalism, as opposed to neo-Marxist capitalism or socialism. And the problem with socialism is they have to choose the socialist. Socialism becomes, the state becomes no power. So it's called a market economy, where the economy, economy is basically decided by the state. The state runs the economy, and they have to choose what to produce and how much to produce of everything. Well, the teacher affects eternity, and he can't tell whether his or her influence stops. The home was the child's first classroom. Parents are responsible for feeding and caring for the child and for his spiritual development. Many Christian parents promise God at the time the child's dedication that they would provide a spiritual environment in which their child would come to a personal knowledge of Jesus Christ as Savior. Every day in a child's life is gained or lost in spiritual development. Parental responsibility for the spiritual development of children explained the passion that Christian parents had throughout the American history, throughout the training of their children. Worldviews are learned, they're not inherited. If parents didn't teach or have a biblical worldview taught to their children, children would potentially adopt a secular humanist worldview from the secular classroom. Education from a Christian perspective begins with a fear of the Lord and finish with a commandment to love the Lord thy God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and your neighbors yourself. So basically, the laws of Christianity are diametrically opposed to that of socialism. And treason, basically, by the educators, was found when Dewey and his cohorts, like G. Stanley Hall, came up with this idea that education was something that was supposed to be, he was trying to get away from people reading and becoming independent in their thoughts. And so a long-term utopia required destroying America's political, social, and moral culture of religious freedom, individual rights, unobtrusive government, high literacy for all, destroying the brain power of a nation. This was like an act of war. We all have schools and teachers, colleges, but nobody knows what the purpose of them is, except for maybe making teachers' salaries. But to Dewey, the greatest obstacle to socialism was the private mind that seeks knowledge in order to exercise its own private judgment and intellectual authority. In most countries that were run by a king, it was the king and his people that were taught a liberal education. Why? Because they had to rule. So they needed to know a little liberal. In other words, all areas, they had to know a little bit about everything. And that's the way it was with the founding fathers when they came over to this country. They believed that we all had to learn to be able to read so we can read our Bible so we could keep the government under control. And that's basically why they passed the old Deluder Satan Act, which basically said that every child, every borough, every person in the country had to be able to learn to read. So they started these schools, and these schools were quite advanced. It was very interesting to see how advanced they really were. Well, John Dewey invited the Frankfurt School, as I've mentioned, and basically they used their influence to destroy almost every one of the institutions that we have. They use Put Their Man in leadership in both the newspapers, the television, radio, universities, and also projected that Marxism right down through each one of these the areas of our culture, they called it, the long march through the institutions. So they took over every institution that they could with money from the Rockefeller Foundation and basically put their man in charge. And that's why we have in most of our area of culture and media, people of a Marxist mentality. Then we have Gus Hall, who ran for the Communist Party USA for four times. He ran with his running mate, Angela Davis. And he said, basically, as we see, and says, the Christians are always singing about blood. Let us give them enough of it. Let us cut their throats and drag them over the altar. Let them drown in their own blood. I dream of the day when the last priest is strangled on the guts of every last preacher. Nice guy, huh? Well, he basically came up with this idea of the three-legged stool, where the Communist Party USA, the Democratic Party, and the Forces for Political Independence ran everything. And he believed that the Democratic Party would become a front for the Communist Party USA eventually, which is now has actually happened. But the forces of political influence involved radical environmentalists, those opposed to capital punishment, Women's March, LGBTQ, transgender advocates, and about 50 other things, but they all had communist roots. Now, Herbert Hoover warned at a reception on his 80th birthday in West Branch, Ohio, August 10th, 1954. He says, I have witnessed on the ground in 20 nations the workings of the philosophy of that Antichrist Karl Marx. There arise constantly in my mind the forces which make for progress and those which corrode away safeguards of freedom in America. I want to say something, not in the tones of Jeremiah, but in the spirit of St. Paul. Our founding fathers did not invent the priceless boon of individual freedom and respect for the individual dignity of man. That freedom, that great gift to mankind, sprang from the Creator, not from governments. Today, the socialist virus and poison gas generated by Karl Marx and Frederick Engels has spread into every nation on earth. Their dogma is absolute materialism, which defies truth and religious faith. A nation is strong or weak. It thrives or perishes upon its beliefs to be true. If our youth are rightly instructed in the faith of our fathers, then our power will be strong. The whole gamut of socialist infections, I say to you, God has blessed us with another wonderful word, heritage. The great documents and heritage are not from Karl Marx. They are from the Bible, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution of the United States. Within them alone can the safeguards of freedom survive. John Sweeney, in 1994, the AFL-CIO was taken over by John Joseph Sweeney, a Marxist who served as president of the AFL-CIO from 1995 to 2009, which currently has 55 affiliated unions and 12.5 million members, including 3.2 million members in Working America, its new community affiliate. The 1995 election was the first contested election in the AFL-CIO history. In other words, a fraudly, most likely won through fraud. If you wanted to run on the Democratic ticket, you need support of the labor unions. Today, this means you have to introduce and vote on bills that support a far left, in other words, a communist agenda. That's why the Democratic Party today has become a front for the Communist Party USA. They vote only on communist or leftist agenda. And they vote as a bloc. Liberal politics has permeated almost everything. Our border crisis, homelessness, defunding police, street gangs, health crisis, and looting. It's interesting that Deb Haaland became Secretary of the Interior under Biden. She was a communist who banned uranium mining, shut down all oil leases all over the country, shut down the pipeline, putting out 60,000 people out of work. Putin was benefiting from high oil prices. China is loving it. The Interior Secretary, during her swearing in and ceremony with Vice President Kamala Harris, is pictured here. And basically, She is the one who has destroyed our economic. We were at one time, we were energy free. In fact, we were exporting energy to Europe and to the rest of the world. But now we are buying oil, basically tar, from Venezuela, and we have to heat it up to purify it, which costs almost as much as it is to sell it. Now we turn to biotic engineering. There's a book by Yuval Noah Harari, and he basically is Homo Deus. He is an expert and a Jewish historian. Yuval Noah was interviewed by Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes, and his quote is sunny. He says, "We will soon have a power to engineer our bodies and our brains by biotic engineering, or by direct connection our brains to computers, or by creating non-organic entities. Artificial intelligence is not based at all on organic body or brain. This technology is developing at breakneck speed." Interesting to see, I saw him say that if Trump was elected, the World Economic Forum and one world government is dead. So his whole thrust was the socialism had to continue because Trump will basically kill it. And so that might be the most wonderful thing that has happened, really. He says, we may be the thing we are facing is really kind of evolutionary divergence. Conscience is the ability to feel things. Pain, pleasure, love, hate, intelligence is the ability to solve problems. But computers or artificial intelligence don't have consciousness. They just have intelligence. They solve problems in a totally different way than us. They solve problems better than us without having consciousness or feeling, and they have the power over us. Government is collecting data on who we are, where we go, who we meet, what movies we watch. The next phase is a surveillance going on under our skin with the hacking of the human being to get to know us better than we know ourselves. And based on that, by surveilling us, government wants to increasingly manipulate us. We are now in a place where we need global cooperation. You cannot regulate explosive power of AI on a national basis. So that's basically what he's saying. Now, the next phase that I would like to look at is the Trump derangement syndrome. Do you get mistaken for a hyena when you laugh? Do word salads occur frequently? Now there's help. Trumpanol. Trumpanol is designed for those suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. You don't have to CNN to control your life anymore. Trumpanol is fast-acting. Side effects may occur, such as registering as a Republican or voting for Donald Trump. Consult with your doctor before taking Trumpanol. Are you sick and tired of your calm, peaceful life? Are you sleeping too well at night? Is your city too safe? No, not anymore. Introducing Democrats, politicians so incompetent that they fill your neighborhood with riots, looting, rampant violence, and even homelessness. The secret is a special blend of corruption and good old-fashioned stupidity. So anyway, just a little bit of fun there. Socialism, however, as it says, cannot serve citizens' interests, because central planners have no way of knowing what those interests are. In the absence of information conveyed through the marketplace activity, particularly through prices, economic planners are left with highly defective sources of information: opinion polling, surveys, stated preferences, which normally differ dramatically from the real or revealed preferences. Many people don't want to really reveal what their real preferences are. And so take a simple example. Milk, with approximately 120 million households in the United States using 0 to 20 quarts per week, four levels of fat content, organic, inorganic, soy, dairy, and three flavor options, you end up with about 6 trillion options to choose from. Although millions have been executed for questioning the decisions made by socialist dictators, many more millions have died from starvation due to ineffective planning and price controls. In National Geographic 2008, when food shortages became critical in Venezuela, for instance, Helen Mercado and Luis Cada visited store after store searching for milk for their three-year-old son, but many times the young couple had to settle for liquid yogurt, which was more widely available because it was unregulated. With thousands executed in Cuba's Castro's Cuba, it is a crime to meet to discuss the economy, to write letters to the government, to report on political developments, to speak to international reporters, to advocate for human rights, to visit friends or relatives outside your local area of residence without governmental permission. Cubans are arrested without warrants or prosecuted for failing to denounce fellow citizens for general dangerousness. And should some crime not be covered by these criminal code provisions, further acts against state security are made up. The criminals found guilty under this criminal justice system and their fate is rarely in doubt, often serve 10 to 20 years in jail for political crimes. But most Cuban criminals are not political. A large portion of the estimated 180,000 to 200,000 common criminals in Cuba's 500 prisons are people who broke the law by killing their own pigs, cattle, or horses and selling the excess meat on the black market. Well, socialism is not only bad, it's dirty. The Aral Sea, which is actually a lake, once was one of the world's most magnificent bodies of water, covering more than 23,000 square miles of territory between Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan to form the Earth's fourth largest lake. Fed by two rivers, the Sri Darya and the Amudarya, the Aral Sea supported a host of industries, fishing most prominent among them, and was central to the surrounding people's way of life. Then the central planners set their eyes on it. In 1920, Kazakhstan became a Soviet Socialist Republic, a component of the USSR. Uzbekistan followed suit in 1924. The socialist economic doctrine of the USSR called for the centralization and systematization of agriculture as a prelude to the massive and rapid industrialization of the new socialist society. So rivers feeding the Aral Sea were diverted by order of the central planners to be used for irrigating the new collectivized state farms, in this case, massive cotton farm plantations. This produced ecocide. Most agree that the Aral Sea catastrophe is one of the worst environmental disasters of human history. What remains of the Aral Sea is a pond of poison. After the rivers were diverted and the sea began to dry up, mineral salts and other toxins in the sediment turned to dust and were dispersed upon the land and into the people's lungs by the wind. The water and the underlying sediments had long been contaminated by runoff from the surrounding agricultural products with the excessive use of pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers. Likewise, intensive industrial projects, mostly involving mining and metallurgy, had been empowered by government authorities to engage in massive discharges of pollution. Uranium plants stored radioactive waste in poorly constructed containment facilities, and nearby Polygon nuclear weapon testing facility produced its share of toxins as well. Toward the end of the Soviet era, the central planners were still busily polluting the land, air, and water as far away as the Kola Peninsula and Norilsk in the Arctic. In 2000, mining operations stripping nickel, copper, and phosphorus from the region, along with huge pulp factories set up there, were producing enormous untold amounts of pollution. Sulfur dioxide emissions alone amounted to 600,000 tons per year in the Kola Peninsula and 2 million tons per year in Norilsk. Thousands of square miles of formerly pristine Arctic wilderness and forest were clear-cut or heavily devegetated. They even managed to poison the snow. The explosion at the Soviets' Chernobyl military power plant in 1986 was one of the worst environmental catastrophes in the world history. The mismanagement of the plant was shocking, as the central planners' utterly disregard for the public they purported to serve, shocking but categorically typical of socialism. One-sixth of Russia's territory has become uninhabitable. The nationalization of heavy industries has been the hallmark of socialist regimes everywhere. In India, Iran, Mussolini's Italy, 1970s era Britain, Libya, Mexico, Nigeria, and Venezuela, the oil companies were nationalized under socialist theories of economic planning. What resulted was, in most every case, an extraordinary high levels of pollution with zero accountability. If BP spills oil in the Gulf of Mexico, the United States knows, in the words of President Obama, who's asked to kick. But when government is the oil is the oil industry. Who regulates the regulators? Mexico's Pemex Oil is the second biggest company in the world, which is completely controlled by the Mexican government. The Mexican government derives significant revenue from Pemex's oil operation, so it has little incentive to crack down on the firm for environmental or safety reasons. In 1979, an explosion at Pemex's Lextoc well in the Gulf of Mexico off of Texas coast caused what was at that time the largest oil spill in history. Pemex chemicals dumped into the Cocos River have wiped out most of the fish population, bankrupting fishermen and devastating the ecology. Fisherman Eusebio Gonzalez told Joel Simon of the oil industry watchdog Global Community Monitor, "You cut the fish open and a smell of ammonia comes out. If you eat it, your stomach swells up like a balloon." North Korea is not the only state that used hunger as a weapon of mass terrorism. Stalin's Holodomor starved death as many as 10 million Ukrainians and untold millions died from Mao's politically induced famine. The cause of all this suffering was not just the presence of evil men, but the presence of mistaken ideas. The American founders were great men, but they were also working with great ideas. Namely, that given a modest Republican government to defend the borders and hang thieves, people would be better off, more or less, left to their own devices. One wonders how likely it was that extremely evil men would come to power at roughly the same time in Germany, Italy, Russia, and China. It seems likely that as wicked as those dictators were, it was the ideology they followed and not the peculiar moral character of the men involved that was the decisive factor. Indeed, the ideology of central planning is itself an invitation to exercise a dictatorial power and repression. Kamala Harris believes in confiscating America's firearms by force. She would ban fracking on the Alaskan pipeline, which she did, challenge guidelines to suppress the availability of red meat to consumers, ban offshore explorations and drilling, legalize illegal aliens, abolish ICE, and let convicted murderers and terrorists have the vote. Now, she is saying that she will fix prices on food. She was just saying that socialism, this is the result of socialism, result that food producers are not producing the food because they lose money and there'd be no bread on the shelves, no meat, no egg, no vegetables, no necessity of any kind if that were left to continue. And so there's no question that she was in favor of fracking, she says, and going on guns. Harris' website poses that she will ban the assault weapons and high-capacity magazines for everyday Americans. Months after the October massacre, when Hamas' last stronghold was in Rafah, Harris said that she wouldn't rule out consequences for Israel if Israel Defense Forces went into Rafah to take out the last of Hamas and save the hostages. Six hostages, including an American, were found executed by Hamas in the tunnels beneath Gaza. Harris plans outlined just one thing after another. Basically, what was basically to destroy America's culture. And somebody produced a roadmap showing signs on the road, which I thought was rather humorous. It was lefties losing it. And the road signs, rapists for Harris, Chinese communists for Harris, junkies for Harris, convicts for Harris, car thieves for Harris, transsexuals for Harris, gays for Harris, drug dealers for Harris, alcoholics for Harris, Mexican cartels for Harris, sex traffickers for Harris, and it goes on and on. Tim Walz, basically a Minnesota bar owner, said evil Tim Walz forced her into bankruptcy with COVID closures, $300,000 in legal bills. Governor Tim Walz's restrictive pandemic-era lockdowns in the state disseminated local businesses and caused financial ruin for those who stood up for their livelihoods. I think he's an evil man who overstepped his role as governor. He took small businesses and ripped them up. He destroyed us, says Lisa Zarza, 52. She told the Post, "I had to leave the state in order to be able to legally work and make a living." By eliminating the availability of oil and gas, which we have in abundance, this team will destroy the middle class, take away the money used to buy and build weapons to defend ourselves, and make us vulnerable to takeover by China and or Russia. This is what would have happened. And basically, fortunately, this didn't happen because Trump won the election. Now, we have things that Trump had accomplished, and I would like to go through those things, but it would take me almost an hour just to list the things that he's done. But just to start, unprecedented, and this is what he did in the first few years of his election in 2016. And this was, we built the world's most prosperous economy. America gained 7 million new jobs, more than three times the government experts' projections. Middle-class family income increased by $6,000, more than five times the gains during the entire previous administration. The unemployment rate reached 3.5%, the lowest in half a century, achieved 40 months in a row of more job openings than job hirings. More Americans reported being employed than ever before, nearly 160 million. Jobless claims reached a nearly 50-year low. The number of people claiming unemployment insurance as a share of the population hits its record low and delivered future of greater promise and opportunity for citizens of all backgrounds. Unemployment rates for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, Native Americans, veterans, individuals with disabilities, and those without a high school diploma all reached record lows. Unemployment for women hit its lowest rate in nearly 70 years, lifted nearly 7 million people off food stamps. Poverty rates for African Americans and Hispanic Americans reached record lows. Income inequality fell for two straight years and by the largest amount in over a decade. The bottom 50% of American households saw a 40% increase in their net worth. Wages rose fastest for low-income and blue-collar workers. Brought jobs and factories and industries back to the U.S., created more than 1.2 million manufacturing and construction jobs, put in place policies to bring back supply chains from overseas. His record stock market numbers hit record 401ks, rebuilding and investing in rural America. And I cannot stop 20 pages of achievements that Trump did during his short term that he had in the White House. And we're looking forward to what he can do in the future. A message from Donald Trump: we overcame the obstacles that nobody thought possible. It's our political victory that our government has never seen before. I want to thank American people for an extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president. And with that, I close.